Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We have on the line, and by the way, this man has been double booked. I think you will hear him on The Fan again tomorrow on our midday show.
He's in demand.
But Sook scooped him.
That's right.
This is Robert Moore. He is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, On Trails. He spent 4 years reporting a podcast miniseries about the life of Joe Exotic, which is available now from Wondery, called Joe Exotic, Tiger King. Robert, hello.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. I wonder, everybody's talking about this Tiger King thing because of the Netflix doc. Does that piss you off a little bit that nobody knows that, well, people know, but that this has gained such mainstream accolades?
No, it doesn't bother me too much. I mean, we did very well. We were the number one podcast in the iTunes store for a while. We got, you know, 5 or 6 million downloads, and it's getting made into a TV show. So I'm not complaining about how the podcast did.
All right.
Now, when how did you first come about this? Because you said it was like 4 years in the making. How did you first stumble upon this?
Yeah, so I first stumbled upon it just through a random newspaper story in the LA Times. It said Michael Jackson's alligators burned alive in zoo fire. And I clicked on the story and thought, well, that's kind of odd. And then in the story, it mentions that the zoo belongs to this guy named Joe Exotic. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd, Joe Exotic. And so I Googled Joe Exotic. And then, you know, if you guys have ever done even a Google image search for Joe Exotic, that's all it takes to fall down the rabbit hole. So
totally.
I had a friend who was working at a big men's magazine, which I'm not going to name. And I pitched in the story, and he said, yeah, go down there, check it out. So I went down for a week. Joe was very gracious. He gave me a trailer to live in, and I followed Joe around for a whole week. And over the course of that week, his obsession with Carole Baskin became very quickly apparent, to the point where at the end of the week, he was saying things like, you know, that he had an AR-15 set aside to kill Carole, that he dreamed about seeing her brains on a wall. And so I was like, this is intense. There's a story here. But The magazine in the end ended up killing the story. They didn't want it because there's no shape to it. You know, there's no story. It was just a guy in Oklahoma. So I kind of waited, and I went back 2 years later. I visited Joe again. I went and visited Carole a bunch of times and interviewed her. And then once Joe got arrested, finally I knew I had an outlet for the story. So I pitched it to New York Magazine and did a big 10,000 word article for them and the 6-piece miniseries podcast for Wondery.
Okay. All right. So what years were you there with Joe?
So 2015 is when I first went down there. That's right after the zoo fire. It was still just like a scorched patch of concrete. And then I came back in 2017 in the winter. And then I came back again a couple of times in 2019 for the trial. 2018 and 2019. Okay. So I've seen it under Jeff Lowe's ownership as well.
Gotcha.
A couple of times.
So you watch this thing, and it's hard to believe that it's real. And you're like, God, how much of this is being played up for TV? But I was listening to some of your podcasts. This sounds authentic. That this is just, this was all reality. This was not for TV. This was as crazy as it seemed.
Yeah, it's hard for me to explain it to people because oftentimes I'll be telling someone the story of Joe Exotic and then they stop me and they go, is this like a novel that you're writing? And I have to remind them, no, this is true. All of this happened. I mean, there are people who exaggerate. Joe, for example, is a liar. He's a pathological liar. He'll lie to your face. He lied to my face many times. He told me he was dying of cancer, told me he had bone marrow cancer, you know, and I felt terrible. I felt legitimately sad that this guy was going to die. That was a complete lie. And to a certain extent, Carol is a liar as well. I mean, I caught her out in a couple of really strange lies. So, you know, there's not a lot of consistency among their stories, but all this stuff really happened, and these people really exist, and they are all very big characters.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk, for the people who have not seen it, don't know what we're talking about. Joe, it had a zoo in rural Oklahoma.
Zoo's a strong word.
Well, that's what they called it. Yeah. And he had tigers, and he would sell the cubs and make money, and he became the showman, and he's openly gay, and there's all that element of it too. But Carol is more of a rescue. She called herself a rescue. She does the same thing that Joe does in terms of charging people to come and see her animals, but she claims she's rescuing them, whereas Joe is exploiting the trade. What did you find is any difference between the two? I mean, they both ended up hating each other because Carol's trying to shut down Joe and Joe's trying to shut down Carol. But what is there a difference between the two? Is Carol good and Joe bad, or can you trust none of them?
There's a couple of key differences between them. First of all, you know, they did have a feud. They both disliked each other. Carol never threatened to kill Joe. Joe tried to get people to kill Carol all the time. I watched him do it. He would try and plant the idea in people's head so that one of his crazy followers would go do it. And he tried to do that for years before he actually paid a hitman to do it. I'm sure we can discuss that later. Yeah. But the key difference between the two places, and I'll agree, Carol's place is not the nicest place on earth. You know, there's rusty looking cages. You know, there's weeds and stuff, and the enclosures aren't that big. But the key thing is she doesn't breed them. Okay, so when you breed these tigers for cub petting, you are creating a whirlpool situation where you're creating more and more tigers that are cute and cuddly, and you can legally pet them from 4 to 12 weeks. But after that 12 weeks, you have a tiger that is roaming around, and you have to do something with it. So you either sell it to someone, which means a tiger ends up in a backyard cage, which happens all the time, or you kill it. You know, or you end up doing what Joe did, which is basically you start hoarding them, and you end up with 200 tigers in a zoo, which you have to feed, which is very expensive. So you have to breed more tigers, and you end up in this, like, feedback loop. Carol never breeds tigers. In fact, she's trying to pass a bill to stop the breeding, mm-hmm. the private breeding, the sale, the private exhibition of tigers. That's her main cause. But you're right, she does charge people money to go see tigers in cages. So in that way, I guess you can say there's an equivalency there.
Okay, but wait a minute. And that's kind of what the undertones of it all, at least just watching the documentary, is that Carol seems like a pretty good person. But then there's that whole thing about, oh, she may have killed her husband and fed him to the tigers. Like, what do you think of that? Did Carol murder her husband? Or what is your thought on how that all went down?
I cannot comment on that. People ask me that question all the time, and I can't, I mean, just for legal reasons, I can't comment on that because, you know, that's a very dicey thing to accuse someone of murder when they've never even been named a suspect in a case. You know, but I will say there's a lot of suspicious evidence that doesn't make sense in that case. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, as it was laid out in the documentary, there was the van that was found, which was parked at an airport. Apparently the seat in the van had been pushed farther back from the gas pedals than Don's height. So that didn't make sense. Then that van was left in Carol's custody for a couple of days before the police collected it to do any evidence search on it. There's other stuff they didn't mention in the documentary. There is the fact that Don's signature on his last will and testament, his power of attorney, doesn't match the signature on the restraining order that he filled out against Carol, saying that he was afraid of Carol. There's also another restraining order so she had a boyfriend a couple of years after Don, who was named Jay Baikal. He filled out a restraining order against her as well. And in that restraining order, he says he's afraid of her, she carries guns, and that she had mentioned that her husband was killed and that they were digging up a nearby property. And she said, I hope they don't find bones there or I'll be in big trouble.
Oh, my God.
Which is a strange thing to say. No, none of that adds up to she definitely killed her husband. But what it does add up to is that there's a lot of odd pieces in this puzzle and there's not enough evidence yet. So I think what people want, especially Don's children, is for the police to start pursuing this case again. The case was never closed officially. It's still open. They just stopped pursuing it. Hmm. Maybe with the attention from this Netflix thing, they'll pursue it to its conclusion.
Like it's, I was going to ask you, what's the strangest part about this whole thing? But each one is more bizarre than the other. Joe was married to, Joe's a gay man, and he was married to three straight men. One of them killed himself, but not on purpose. And then his first husband, I was reading through some of your stuff that isn't mentioned in the Netflix documentary. He's in jail for murder now as well, but for a different murder?
Yeah. This whole story has a quality I like to call fractal weirdness, which is the more you zoom in on any one detail, it gets stranger and stranger and stranger, and it never stops. But actually, what's interesting is that guy that you mentioned was not Joe's first husband. That was Joe's second husband. Joe had another husband before that husband, who was his very first husband, this guy by the name of Brian Rhine. And it's actually quite an interesting story, because this was back when, before Joe had a zoo, he owned a pet store in Dallas. And he and Brian was openly gay, unlike a lot of Joe's later boyfriends and husbands. He was actually openly gay. And they apparently had a really good relationship. He's a really sweet guy. They, you know, lived in a trailer together. They had poodles. They ran this pet store that was sort of a gay-themed pet store. And they had, like, a good little life together. Then Joe went and opened this zoo. And at the same time, Brian died of complications related to HIV. And according to a lot of people, it broke Joe's heart. I mean, he basically died in Joe's arms in the parking lot of this hospital. And people told me that after that, Joe changed. He basically, someone said, you know, on that day, Joe Schreibvogel died and Joe Exotic was born. You know, this guy who was obsessed with attention and money and power started to come to the forefront. And this guy who really loved animals and was about rescuing them fell away, until by the end, there was no Joe Schreibvogel left. It was all Joe Exotic. And then he starts dating these straight guys. He picks up this young guy, J.C. Hartpence, who is later convicted and imprisoned, not just for first-degree murder, but also for sexually molesting a young girl. I mean, really a nasty character. And then he finds all these other young guys. He brings them in. They usually worked on his staff. He'd bring them in, and he'd convince them to live with him.
Okay, good grief. all right, so we're talking here with Robert Moore. He's the author of a book called On Trails, and he spent 4 years reporting on Joe Exotic. His podcast is available on Wondery. It is called Joe Exotic, Tiger King. Okay, so, and then a lot of people are talking about this Joe Exotic guy because Tiger King has come out as a docuseries on Netflix, which you can check out, and you should. It's unbelievable. What is it about the exotic animal trade? I mean, we're talking about all these characters. If you watch the docuseries, there's another guy named Doc Antel who seems as creepy as any of them.
He's got a sex cult.
Yeah, he's like this mystical, he's a doctor of mystical science, and he just seems like he's just a smarter version of Joe.
And he's like a Rajneeshi or something.
Yeah, he's got that. And then you've got some drug kingpin who used to hide drugs in snakes. I mean, what is it about the exotic animal trade that attracts all of these deadbeats?
Yeah, I don't think deadbeats is the right term. They're eccentric people who are drawn to extremes, I think. You have to think about the psychology of someone who wants to own a pet tiger, right? Because you could own a pet cat, and you could love that cat, and that cat would love you back, and that cat would never kill you in your sleep, ever. Tigers are different. People who like tigers are different. They're drawn to that danger. And they are kind of repelled by, like, normalcy. They want to be exotic. They want to be strange. And so the through line among all these people in this documentary is that they're drawn to that. And that's how their lives take this, like, really grotesque, colorful character, I think, is because they're always drawn to the extreme thing. When they have a safe choice and a dangerous choice, they take the dangerous one every time. And it makes their lives take the strangest courses. All of them, Jeff Lowe, everybody in the documentary. Yeah. Alan Glover, James Garrison, they're all kind of like that.
That's a great point. Is Jeff Lowe still got that zoo, and is he still trying, or did he build the new one?
Well, as far as I know, and I've been a little bit out of the loop for the last couple months, but as far as I know, he's still running the GW Zoo. He shut down his Facebook page, so it's harder to keep tabs on him, but he's still running that zoo. He has not built the new one. He and that guy, Tim Stark, had a falling out, and I think the funding kind of fell apart. Mm-hmm. So as far as I know, that place has not been built yet. If you want to go visit Joe Exotic's old zoo, it's still there. It's still open. I wouldn't necessarily encourage you to, like, give your money to that operation, but if you're, you know, really curious, you can go down there and see it. It's in Winningwood, Oklahoma.
And let me ask you this, because obviously, it alludes to it quite a bit of meth. How prevalent was meth? Because it seems like this is all fueled by it.
Yeah, that was my first impression when I showed up at the zoo. You just get like a very strong meth vibe the moment you walk in the door. There's a lot of employees with missing teeth. But then again, it's kind of hard to tell, right? Because like they, for example, a lot of people had scabs on their arms and holes in their clothes. But you think, well, maybe that's from the tiger claws. Mm. You know, maybe that's not from the meth. Maybe he got headbutted by a camel and his tooth fall out. But then later, so after I spent that first week at the zoo, I interviewed like many dozens of former employees at the zoo. And they started to tell me, yes, meth was prevalent among the employees and Joe was on meth. I mean, you know, you can see he twitches his nose a lot. He's got a lot of the kind of like characteristics of someone who's either been doing coke or meth. I mean, I don't know if that comes across the documentary, but it's very clear in my time with him. And he often gave meth to his boyfriends. So one of Joe's favorite things to do when he, you know, wanted a vacation is they would go to this motel called the Habana Inn, and he and John and whoever would hole up there and do meth and have orgies for like days. And, you know, sort of invite people in. That's how he liked to, you know, decompress.
Romantic. Okay. So you got there just at the time when they had the fire. He burned that down, right? Because of all the footage that was in there that he didn't want released.
Yeah, I mean, that was a mystery up until basically until this documentary came out. I was not 100% sure. There's footage in this documentary that makes me 100% sure. There's two pieces of evidence that are really clear, because previously it was like Joe was accusing Rick Kirkham and Rick Kirkham was accusing Joe. And it was a little bit hard, but my suspicion was that Joe had done it. The key pieces of evidence are two. One is there's a point where Jeff says to Joe on one of those taped recordings, which I don't think is in the documentary, but it's in the podcast, where he says, why don't you just burn it down the way you did the tiger, you know, the tiger studio or whatever. And Joe says nothing. He doesn't respond. He doesn't deny it. And then in the documentary, there's footage of him going into the lawyer's office and the lawyer basically planting the idea in his head. I don't know if you guys remember that, but the lawyer says, I mean, it's amazing. That piece of footage is just such an incredible, I really have to take my hat off to Eric and Rebecca. It is such an incredible get. There's so many moments like that in this documentary where you think, how did they possibly find that shot? And the reason why is because they had everything. They had all of Joe's footage. They bought his computer hard drives. So they got not just all of his footage, but all of his text messages, everything. They had everything of his that he'd ever shot over his entire career there. And he shot a lot of footage.
Interesting. Wait a minute. So the documentary guy that was filming the documentary behind the documentary that was in the film, his stuff got all wiped and he said he didn't back it up. You're saying all of that stuff was somewhere else, or this is just additional footage that Joe had because he filmed everything?
No, it is, I have heard multiple people tell me that they believe Joe took some hard drives out of the studio or had someone do it before they burned it down. And he hid the footage to lead Rick to believe that it all burned down wouldn't come asking for it.
Yeah.
And because later footage starts emerging and people say, wait, that was supposed to have been on those hard drives. That should have burned up in the fire. And you know, there were other things that he apparently wanted to dispose of that ended up in the fire. You know, it's all very suspicious.
I got it.
Were you ever scared? there's some serious stuff going on. Were you ever fearful of your personal safety?
The first time I was there, I wasn't that fearful because I didn't really know enough to be fearful. I mean, Joe was very fast and loose with guns. I saw him shoot at one of his employees' feet one time, like not at his feet, but at the ground near their feet to kind of make them hurry up because they were moving too slow. So that was one thing, just the guns made me nervous. But the next time I came back, in between, I talked to all of his employees. One of his former employees told me, and this is more or less an exact quote, he said, you need to be careful because they have a system set up down there for death, meaning that they oftentimes would take a cow or a horse and kill it and feed it to the tigers. He said, you could be shot, slaughtered, and fed out to the cats in 15 minutes. That was something that made me very nervous the next time I went back to the zoo, because then I go back in 2017 and Jeff Lowe is now there. And Jeff Lowe and John, this was during that period where Jeff and Joe were together at the zoo. And I was interviewing Joe and Jeff was standing there with this cold glare just watching me the entire interview. And it's the middle of winter. There's no one in the zoo. I am alone in this zoo with, you know, in rural Oklahoma. That was a chilling moment. That was a moment where I thought I need to really tr- tread lightly here.
Interesting. So how long is Joe in jail for?
He's in jail still currently because they haven't transferred him yet. But he's been sentenced to 22 or 23 years in federal prison.
Okay. And I saw somebody said today, just today, he filed like a big old $94 million lawsuit or something claiming.
Yeah, he's filing lawsuits. He's filing appeals. He's trying to claim that the whole investigation was corrupt. It's, in my opinion, very shaky. The evidence he has is very shaky. It's not going to hold up in court.
So the guy he paid to kill Carol,
the FBI guy.
Well, no, it was the right hand man of Jeff Lowe, who hated.
That's right. Yeah, there's two guys. Oh. There was Alan Glover, who was Jeff's right hand man,
yeah.
And then there was the FBI agent. But he never actually gave money to the FBI agent. He just sort of.
He gave money to Alan, and Alan was never going to kill Carol because Alan hated Joe.
Okay, so this is where it gets interesting because the documentary leaves out a really key piece of information. So Jeff hated Carol also, right? They both did. Jeff told me when I interviewed him that he hated Carol. He thought she was the devil incarnate.
Okay.
So they both had a reason to want to see her gone. Now, Alan told Jeff in that recorded phone call that you heard in the documentary, he says, why would I want to go to Florida? I never go to no Florida. However, when he was on the stand during the trial, he said that he did go to Florida. He told this story, said he was in South Carolina. He decided he wanted to warn Carol. So he got in his car. He was drunk and high on cocaine. He drove all night down to Florida, ended up on a beach somewhere near Tampa, ended up passing out at like drinking with some random people and passing out at their house, and then woke up in the morning and drove all the way back, which makes no sense.
Okay.
And the only thing I can rationalize about it is, in fact, he probably did go down to Florida. And as he said, he chickened out, that he had intended to kill her. I mean, this is a suspicion, but this is where the evidence leads you to believe, is that he actually got a lot closer than you think to killing Carol.
Wow. All right. And that's why Joe's in jail. You can't do that. No. So last question. I know this is running way too long. I really appreciate your time. Why is that bill not passed? That seems so obvious. What Carol's fighting for, this trade to be shut down. What is the holdup on that?
I've never gotten a straight answer on that. I don't know. It's not really, it doesn't seem like a political, like left versus right type of issue. You know, I mean, Joe and his followers tend to be pretty right wing, and they argue that this is like a basic American freedom. Like Joe would often say that if I can afford to feed an elephant, I should have the right to own one. That's my right as an American. I think that's kind of absurd. I think most people think that's kind of absurd, especially when it comes to a deadly animal like a tiger or a lion. I'm not quite sure why that hasn't passed yet, but it seems like it probably will one day, just because its day has come. I mean, you shouldn't be selling tigers. You shouldn't be owning tigers in a cage in your backyard, in my opinion, and I think in most people's opinion.
Yeah, makes no sense. Well, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for the insight, and keep up the great work, Robert.
Thank you so much, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.